Blog Talk Radio.
Spirit of Truth Ministry now presents The Bible on Trial, a show that tests the teachings of Christianity against the words and the teachings that Jesus Christ gave to his own eyewitness disciples while he was here on earth. Join us for a challenging and unique study into truth, justice, and the kingdom of heaven. Hello and welcome, everyone. My name is Dennis Neufeld, and I am here with Rick Sterling and Dr. Don, just about getting ready to have another exciting and challenging discussion on our show called The Bible on Trial. This show was basically founded by Rich Humpel, Dr. Rich, many, many years ago. And what we do is we test the beliefs, the practices, the tenets of Christianity and indeed other religions against the gold standard of truth, the words of Jesus as he gave to his own disciples while he was here on earth. And we try to find out if there's any differences. And if you've been listening any length of time, oh boy, you know that there are. We're going to get started with our show here in just a minute. First, today's date is February 12, 2016. We are 2 days away from Valentine's Day, the one holiday that my wife has given me permission to ignore, which means I better not ignore it. So I usually get her a card and, you know, do something really special for her, take her coffee and a breakfast on. Wait a minute, I do that anyway. We are delighted that you are here with us today. I'd like to call your attention to our chat room, which I am monitoring today. And by the way, it looks like we have Chris 1413 up on our chat room today. Nice to have you with us. I have posted two links to our websites. The first one is our WordPress website at spiritoftruthministry.net. There you will find a copy of our book that was published in 2007, The Spirit of the Church, by Rick Sterling and me, Dennis Neufeld. We also have a lot of continuation of writing that Rick does, and from time to time we post new material up on that website. You can go there and you can register for our RSS feeds, and they will notify you. They will notify you when we publish another one of Rick's papers. We also have our original website listed up on our chat room at spiritoftruthministry.net/STNM, and I have to change that because I put a dot instead of a forward slash, and I will do that in a minute. I guess I was listening to Rick while I was doing that, and I get so involved with that that, anyway, you can go there for our some historical material. You can, lots of writing by different authors here at Spirit of Truth Ministry, and there are some interesting articles. In fact, we're coming up. We're in Lent. This is the third day of Lent, and
not that we're practitioners of Lent,
but there are many people out there who do, and we are coming up very, very shortly on to Easter. And there is a paper on in the must-read section of our original website called A Case for the Wednesday Crucifixion of Jesus. So that'll stimulate your gray matter a little bit, and we hope that you will go and check that out as well. So let's, now that we've got that done, let's get started with our study. Father in heaven, I thank you so much for being with us here today in spirit and in truth. Thank you for providing us your words in the Old Testament and the words of Jesus Christ that he gave to his own eyewitness disciples in the New Testament whereby we can test everything, that we can know for sure what is the truth. We thank you for this, and we ask you right now to bless all those who are here and all those who are listening wherever and whenever they listen, that you will guide them and guide us into truth. I thank you for this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Good morning, Dr. Don.
Good morning.
Nice to see you. Morning, Rick. And the one thing that those of you who aren't here are missing is that I am experimenting with some cake recipes because my lovely and gracious daughter has challenged me to make her wedding cake. And that's going to be exciting. So we don't know when they're actually going to be getting married. They haven't chosen a date yet, but my daughter is engaged, and that is rather exciting. We had a wonderful meal with them last night, actually, at a wonderful restaurant in Redlands. And I got to tell you, I really like this guy. He is a real gentleman, and he's treating my daughter the way I would want him to treat my daughter. So it's really nice. Anyway, good morning all. Good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are.
Well, Dennis, you say you're preparing for a wedding, but you don't know the date.
I was wondering if you were going to pick up on that. See, I just love the way we can feed these topics right in there. No, we know they're getting married, but they have not set a date. So I don't.
Here's another question. They have not set a date yet. They have a general time frame that they're looking at.
Late summer, fall.
But they have not set a date. So when they send out the invitations, do they put in the invitation, the date will be determined at a future time?
That would be redundant. They would have to do it all over again once they chose the date. You don't send out wedding invitations if there is no time frame, if there is not a specific time when action has to be taken. Good point.
There is going to be a wedding in the celestial
in the
celestial realm, a marriage between God's Son, who was a spiritual being, and had his consciousness, awareness, if that's what you want to call it, placed into a physical body, flesh and blood as we refer to it. And then his flesh and blood body received spiritual qualities. And as we've spoken of before, God had a situation forced upon him, which was not one of his own choosing, but one that he was forced to deal with all the same. Beings that he had created to operate as his servants and representatives throughout his creation had been sent to this earth to care for, watch over, and teach humanity, the nations. These people were created for the glory of God, for his joy, and to care for this wonderful, incredible planet called Earth. In Genesis, it says they were to subdue it. They were to make the Earth operate as God had planned when he created it. But they could only accomplish this through learning the information that they needed to have. And so God gave them teachers. These teachers instigated a rebellion. And they took for themselves that which did not belong to them. They took this earth, they deceived the nations, and they became the rulers, the gods of the nations, and that's small g. And God had a plan that would restore this world back to him, where he was the ruler of this world and he was the God that the people of this world would worship. And that's what we have been discussing over the last, what would you say, Dennis, 9 or 10 years?
Yeah, at least.
On Blog Talk Radio, it's a subject that we here have been discussing for the last 22 and a half years. And a lot has happened in that time. God's plan for restoration could only be accomplished through willing human participants. So God's problem, if you want to call it that, was to develop willing human participants. And the bottom line was that God needed, and what was required, were people who had a pure heart, were full of integrity, who would honor God and serve Him through love and faithfulness. And this is not a condition that God can force, or that God can in other words, this is a condition that must be developed and not caused. God chose the children of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob to be the initial group that He would work with and develop these pure characteristics in, and that through them all the nations of the world would come to know that they had been deceived by an evil rebellion, and that they would then be given an informed opportunity to choose right or to choose wrong. And having done this, there would be a final judgment where the earth would be cleansed of all corruption. And again, it would experience the purity of truth, righteousness, joy, and well-being. But the chosen people were unwilling. When God chose the offspring of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, He informed them that they were the people of His choosing. And He had His servant Moses write down all of the things, all the information that the people needed to know to accomplish God's plan. Not to get started, but to accomplish His plan. And this information is still available to us today in the first five books of the Bible. It is referred to as the Law of Moses, the Pentateuch, the Torah, and other names. And what we can understand from the law is that this was the invitation to the marriage. One thing we understand about the marriage process is the bride is not invited to her wedding. The bride does not receive an invitation from the groom in the mail, informing her that she has been invited to her own wedding. and an invitation that said, you are cordially invited to get married to so-and-so at such and such a time on such and such a day. Be sure to wear your wedding garment. Now, the invitation is mailed to the guests, the family members of the bride and groom. They are invited and they are informed when the wedding will be. In Matthew chapter 22, starting with verse 1. Jesus began to speak to them in parables once again. The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a feast for his son's wedding. He sent his servants to call those, and notice what it says, who had been invited.
Back to the opening statement here. They had already been invited, and so if they didn't know when he was coming, what would be the point of getting an invitation sent out?
You see, the time for the wedding feast was dependent upon the readiness of the guests. When the guests were ready to go to the feast, this would mean that they had all the required attributes to attend. Apparently and obviously, these invited guests were no more ready to attend the marriage feast than when they had received the invitation. When had they received the invitation? Well, it was when they were in the wilderness between Egypt and the promised land. As they encamped at the foot of the mountain of the Lord. And God gave the invitation, the words of the invitation to Moses, who wrote them down and gave them to the people. The people paid little attention to the words in the invitation, and therefore they were not ready, not prepared to go to the wedding. I want you to remember that, because that same situation continues on throughout time, even into our day. The people paid little attention to the words of the invitation, which described what they must be.
Rick, I think it's really important to insert here, because people have this question. I think it's really important to insert here. People have this question, what does it take to get ready? And what weren't they doing?
That's what we are moving toward.
Well, since this is the Bible on trial, I think one of the things that what would be helpful would be to mention what it is that most Christians believe about this invitation.
That's where we're going.
So I can see that you are, but I just want to let our audience know that what we do here is we test what the beliefs are of Christianity, and then we show what it is that Jesus said about it. And so that you can make a judgment as to whether or not you want to go with what you already know or what you may not be aware of. So just thought
well,
I'd bring
remember
that up.
That God is not working unopposed here. The rebels who took over this earth are not about ready to let God have it back. And they are resisting quite successfully God's any attempt that God has made or is making to regain the world and to bring it again under his authority. The invitation was given by God, who spoke the words of the invitation to Moses, and Moses wrote them down. And we can go in our Bibles and read the first five books. That is the invitation that was given to the children of Israel. And what is important about that invitation is that it described very clearly what was required by every attendee in order to be given a place at the banquet table.
They were required to have on the proper wedding garments,
which is
righteousness,
integrity, honor, respect, pureness of heart. It is what the law describes. What it describes is likened to the garment that each guest must wear in order to be allowed to sit at table with God and join him in the feast.
Now remember,
the marriage of his son.
We have discussed this before, but, and again, back to the purpose of the Bible on trial, most Christians believe that this robe of righteousness, these clothes, are a free gift given by God through Jesus to the people that he loves and that he will not see ever removed from his loving presence.
And we are getting there.
So,
but in that story, the king saw this guy in there and didn't have on his garment. Was the king gracious to him?
He threw him out on his ear is what he did.
He threw him out. And so, for me, you know, I like to think in very simple, uncomplicated terms. If the guy was in there for this big, incredible feast, and he didn't have on his garment, to me, that one of the first things that pops up is there was nobody at the door passing him out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And every church has their doctrinal thing that they study outside of the Bible. What's the big study thing in the Catholic Church outside of the Bible? A catechism. And every church has their study guide. And I won't.
Their addendum.
Yeah. And I won't name any names here, but there's a church out there that we all know and love.
Yes.
And in their study guide a couple of years ago, I was reading. I think I started grabbing whatever was around me because I was starting to faint. And it said, right in that study guide, there was a person at the door passing out the garments, and this guy's problem was he was too stubborn to put it on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible.
Tell those who had been invited.
Wow.
But they would not come. What we really need to understand about the situation here is, why would they not come? Because they had not bothered to get ready. It hadn't interested them. They had no interest in going to the wedding feast. Again, these who were invited were not the bride. If you're going to have a wedding feast, there has to be a bride. There is a groom, there has to be a bride, or there's no wedding. These were the guests. What role did they have to play, if any, in this marriage that God was giving for his son? Well, all we need to do is look at the invitation. And what we see in the invitation is very clearly explained. God had told his family, who were the guests, the children of Israel, and as we have noted before, you did not necessarily have to be, or what I'll say is, to be a native-born Israelite would not get you any more into the marriage feast than if you were not a native-born Israelite. You did not have a birthright that guaranteed you admittance into this feast. Everyone who would go to that marriage banquet all had to be prepared by the words of the invitation. When they knew what the invitation stipulated as what was required in order to sit at table with God. And it didn't matter if you were a native born or if you were foreign born, if you meticulously noted what the invitation required for all guests, and you abided by those instructions, you would be treated as if you had been born in the family. You were all family. Well, how was this to work? Well, what God had done with the children of Israel was, he said, if you are a people of integrity and you develop a pure heart and you act with righteousness and justice, I will bless you. I will prosper you. You will experience life abundantly. You will find joy in your daily living. you will be happy and blessed, and the nations around you will take note. And the nations around you who worship those beings who claim to be God but are not gods will be exposed for the frauds they are. And the people of the nations will recognize that the God of Israel is the only true God. And there will be those who come from the nations and join with Israel, and they will be invited guests just as any Israelite has been invited. And ultimately and finally, when the nations have all been prepared, they will be the bride.
So who are these guests then?
I said the guests are the family. The guests are those who have been born of God. They are righteous. They are pure.
They are
full of integrity.
Okay, and it makes sense because Emily and Aaron have been talking about who they want to have come to their wedding. And there is not one person that they are thinking about inviting. That they haven't sent out invitations yet. But there is not one person that they are thinking about inviting that they don't know. Every single one of the people that they have talked about sending an invitation to is people that they already know. That they already know would come to the wedding if they were invited.
Okay, I have a question. So, this is wonderful. So, ultimately, the nations are the bride, right?
Right.
The guests are the family who have become pure, righteous.
Who've been born of God, yes. When you become pure, righteous, full of integrity, then you are born of God.
Okay, so does this bride have to have the same qualifications?
Yes, the bride has to have the same qualifications.
And when does the bride have a chance to do that?
But here's the difference between the family and the bride. Now, the bride becomes family through marriage. The family has become family through birth.
Exactly. Wow. That's actually pretty spectacular, Rick.
Family through birth and bride through marriage.
Becomes family through marriage.
Wow.
So the bride is actually an in-law. She becomes a bride by on the strength of...
Well, they become one.
Right.
But she becomes family not because she was born in the family, but because she was married into the family. So she would be to the family a sister-in-law, daughter-in-law.
Okay, so we're talking this morning about Nicotai, how God does things right at the last second. As you've been saying here, this family through birth, man, going back to Genesis, the Torah, the Pentateuch, that's old writings.
You are getting there, Don. Hopefully I don't run out of time before
my question is, this bride doesn't have that much time.
No. You remember that in the law, when Moses received the covenant from God, and the covenant is the Ten Commandments, the Ten Commands that were to stand as a visible testimony to the covenantal family relationship between God and his people. And Moses brought those two tablets down from the mountain. And because he heard a great commotion down in the on the plain, and as he came to within sight of the encampment, he saw a pagan orgy going on, realized that the covenant had already been broken, and in a fit of anger and rage and extreme disgust and dissatisfaction, he threw the two tablets of the covenant down, and they smashed on the rocks below. The result of all of that, we are told in the law, was that the people were given the opportunity to choose between the true God, who had humbled the gods, small g, of Egypt, who had humbled Pharaoh and his family
cohorts.
And his servants and his cohorts, had with a mighty hand led them out into the wilderness. They could choose God or the golden calf. The Levites chose God. They were no longer considered as one of the 12 tribes listed on earth. We are told, sons of God. They are his inheritance. Therefore, they did not receive a portion of the land in the promised land, because their land was in heaven. They had exemplified what God had asked for and required. Oh, not every Levite that ever lived was righteous, pure heart, full of integrity. In fact, many were just the opposite. But what God did was he demonstrated through this what he wants. Matthew 22, verse 4. Well, after the first snub, next, he sent some more servants. Tell those who have been invited, he said, that I have my banquet all prepared. My oxen and fatted cattle have all been slaughtered. Everything is ready. Come to the wedding. But they were not interested. Instead, one went off to his farm, another to his business, and the rest seized his servants, maltreated them, and killed them. What is being described here in this parable is what the prophets of God experienced at the hands of God's people.
You know, this sounds like something that an enemy would do. But in fact,
an enemy was doing it.
Yes, but through God's own family. I mean, the family that God had designed and set apart. Wow.
So what the Son of God is describing here in this parable of the wedding feast is, the guest who had been invited paid no attention to the invitation. But that doesn't mean that they didn't see themselves as the invited, or they saw themselves as those entitled. They were already in the marriage on their terms. They couldn't be bothered with that invitation. That invitation which seemed to be so specific. Why? They were already enjoying the fruits of apostasy. They were already having a marriage feast without the details of the requirements. So they continued on and they suppressed and silenced the servants of God who were informing them that they needed to pay attention to the invitation. Well, the king was furious. He dispatched his troops. And in this case, his troops were those of his choosing, the kings of Assyria and Babylon. They destroyed those murderers and burnt their town. Then he said to his servants, "The wedding is ready. But as those who were invited proved to be unworthy, go to the crossroads in the town and invite everyone you can find to the wedding." So those servants went out onto the roads and collected everyone they could find, bad and good alike. And the wedding hall was filled with guests. When the king came in to look at the guests, he noticed one man was not wearing a wedding garment. And he said to him, "How did you get in here, my friend, without a wedding garment?" And the man was silent. Then the king said to his attendants, "Bind him hand and foot and throw him out into the dark, where there will be weeping and grinding of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen." And that word chosen is the same word that is used as purchased, whereas you would go to the grocery store and look at the produce, test it, vet it, and decide which one you choose to purchase. Now, the invitation contained in the law is still valid. It still describes accurately the required vestments. But there have been some change in who this invitation is made to. The son came with words that he said the father had given to him, a testimony, so that no one could say, "Well, I never heard that. I was never told that that was a requirement." One thing the son said when he was here, among many things, we find in Matthew 5, verses 17 through 19. Do not imagine that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. Now, what the prophets were doing was calling attention to the law. And they were showing that the people had not met the requirements of the law. The law is the invitation to the marriage feast. Do not imagine that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to complete them. Now, some would say, oh, yeah, he came to do it for us. Ah, if he came to do it for us and then gift us with the necessary vestments to sit at table with God in the feast, then how would you explain the poor fellow who was bound and cast out? Everyone was invited, bad and good, and the hall was filled with guests. Quite obviously, it is apparent that the Son of God did not fulfill the requirements for everybody because there was one person there who was cast out. What then does he mean by complete them? He means this. Those who were invited twice failed twice. They ignored God. They had better things to do than to go to some feast with God. So they did not complete the requirements of the law and did not listen to the words of the prophets who expressed the law and its required purpose. So the Son of God came here in the likeness of human flesh, and he did what the law required, and he showed us the way that we must follow. We must also complete the law. And that is why he says in the message to Laodicea, those who overcome shall be given the right to sit with me on my throne just as I overcame and sat down by my Father on his throne.
Rick, you're talking about these two refusals of invitation. Are there historical events that we can attach to that?
Yes.
If he can give us those.
When I said that Assyria took the northern kingdom into captivity, Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon took the southern kingdom into captivity, God restored them back to the land. They performed no better than they did at first. In fact, it was more pathetic the second time. And when his son came, they had fully and completely rejected him. And they cast him out and killed him. And that was the second time. That was it. Then all the nations were invited to be born of God. The instructions and the invitation remained the same.
Wow.
They were not changed. I tell you solemnly, till heaven and earth disappear, not one dot, not one little stroke shall disappear from the law until its purpose is achieved. And what was and is the purpose of the law? It describes exactly what each guest needs to accomplish to be able to sit at table with God and have that experience at the marriage feast.
It describes a pre-existing condition. That is, this condition must already be in place. These conditions, this heart, this practice, all of these things must already exist inside the person before that person can enter the marriage feast.
When the invitation goes to bad and good alike, bad and good alike must change as directed by the invitation. The law was given to bad and good alike. It was given to bad and good alike. I just explained how Moses cast the two tablets of stone off the precipice on which he stood. God invited bad and good. And the people responded to the invitation by ignoring it. Therefore, verse 19, the man who infringes even one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be the least in the kingdom of the heavens. But the man who keeps them and teaches them will be considered great in the kingdom of the heavens. Now we're running out of time. I want to read, I believe it's in Galatians. Actually, I think it's in 2 Corinthians. Paul says that the covenant written on stone no longer applies. That now it is the law of the Spirit. And the Spirit gives you life, whereas the letter kills. Paul teaches a salvation apart from the law. And he says with a sneer and sarcastic voice, if you think you can get to heaven on your own good works, then you don't need Christ. And believe me, you will never make it there. Look at Israel. They are a prime example of those who tried to get there on their own good works and how futile that is.
Galatians 3. Well, thank you, Rick, very much for that terrific and stimulating study. I hope everyone will go to our Blog Talk Radio website again and download any of our past shows. I want to invite you to come tomorrow to this same location for another edition of The Revelation of Jesus. Please note that I have linked on our chat room to a paper called The Invitation by Rick Sterling. You can go there and find it. So on behalf of Spirit of Truth Ministry, this is Dennis Neufeld saying so long for now.